blood calcium in fresh cows becomes kind of what some people call a gateway disease. In other words, when blood calcium is not at optimal level, usually low, that leads to problems with milk production, reproductive performance, maybe immunology as well. So certainly there it appears that cows become at a greater risk as far as that goes as well. Historically, I guess our listeners will say, well, gee, Hutchins, you're talking about milk fever. We don't talk about milk fever anymore. Very little discussion. In fact, some farms say less than 1% of their cows develop milk fever. But the big one is hypocalcemia. That's kind of the magic one.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Did you know that beta-carotene deficiency can affect fertility rates and reproductive performance? Victus Transition from DSM Firmenich provides beta-carotene to help your cattle fertility rates. With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, SmaxTech future-proofs your dairy operation. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Adiseo USA, producers of Smartamine M and MilkPay.com. Modern solutions for modern cows with AHV. Contact us to beat biofilm-related issues in your herd.
Hello and welcome back to the Dairy Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. My name is Barry Bradford from Michigan State University. And today, of course, I'm honored to welcome to the show the inimitable Dr. Michael Hutchins from the University of Illinois, or Hutch, as he's better known. Thank you for joining today.
Well, thank you very much, Barry. It's a real honor to be on the program with you today, and hopefully we can share some useful information to our listeners through today's podcast.
So you've remained extremely active in broad-based education in dairy science. You're an emeritus professor. How do you break up your time today? Do you give yourself a little bit of time off? Are you up at 6 o'clock recording lectures still? Or
No, I don't think I get up at 6 o'clock, but we still are fairly active. We're doing some online education here. And in fact, it's expanded and now it's being translated. I guess that technology makes it easy. It's in 5 different languages. And so not only is it English, which perhaps even I question in my English, but the other languages as well. And so we do that, and we are recruiting every month. We do new programs as far as that goes, and we go live for an hour for Q&A and also for new materials as well. So I really enjoy that. Retirement's good. I've enjoyed retirement.
I know you've had the chance to travel all over the world speaking with audiences, and in the last 10 years you've done a lot online and stuff. Do you have one or two stories of places where you've really felt good about the impact you've had through some of these educational efforts?
Yeah, I guess the two would come to mind for two different reasons. First of all, I had a chance to go down to New Zealand and really enjoyed interacting in New Zealand. And we got to Australia at the same time and really enjoyed that interaction there. It was a bit of a learning experience because at that time they were very heavy on pasture, but they were transitioning at that point, leaving some sheep and going to more dairy, especially in the South Island. So it was kind of fun to see that transition that was going. Second of all, they speak English. And trust me, when you're traveling in foreign countries, it's great fun to be able to talk directly with farmers or directly with your host people rather than having to go through interpretation as far as that goes. And I think the second one I enjoyed because they were very willing to listen was China. We had several chances to go to China, primarily with companies, and very aggressive in terms of the kinds of questions and interests that they had. And they really wanted to grow the dairy industry, and they have. They have. Now, they've fallen some tougher times economically, I understand, in the last year or so. But it was a country that determined they were going to build dairies, and they did. And I think they copied the U.S. and Canadian ones pretty carefully on that one. But certainly they've made some real big strides as far as that goes and still have opportunities. So there's still some really neat things that the Chinese dairy industry can do as well. So those are two of the fun countries I enjoyed really visiting.
Interesting. So when you say aggressive, I assume you mean like just really hungry for knowledge and asking a lot of questions.
Yeah, really looking at the latest technology. What are the things that are really working? If you said something, I don't think I would try that, buy that technology, that created all kinds of interest as far as that goes as well. So certainly, though they're always very interested, and it was interesting because typically every PowerPoint that went up on the screen, somebody was taking pictures of it. So that was always, they were going to capture whatever they could, even if some of them were jokes, they took them all.
Weren't sure what they were going to want to translate later, right?
Yeah. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Typical fresh cow incidence of clinical hypocalcemia is 3 to 6%, while subclinical hypocalcemia affects 50% or more mature cows. Based on cutting-edge research, Exelite offers a new approach that is build effective and the ZDUs. For more information, visit www.protecta.com.
Yeah, I've definitely long admired your ability to integrate, you know, different aspects of dairy management, dairy production. Today, I think we're going to focus on transition cow calcium, and probably most of our audience has a pretty good background on that, but it's probably smart to start with why. Why do we think so much? I mean, we don't spend a ton of time talking about magnesium necessarily in a, you know, certain stage of lactation. Why calcium in the fresh cow?
Well, certainly it looks like that blood calcium in fresh cows becomes kind of what some people call a gateway disease. In other words, when blood calcium is not at optimal level, usually low, that leads to problems with milk production, reproductive performance, maybe immunology as well. So certainly there appears that cows become at a greater risk as far as that goes as well. Historically, I guess our listeners will say, well, gee, Hutchins, you're talking about milk fever. We don't talk about milk fever anymore. Very little discussion. In fact, some farms less than 1% of their cows develop milk fever. But the big one is hypocalcemia. That's kind of the magic one. And that's where we have low blood calciums and kind of the neat stuff that's coming on. They're doing some really neat work around the United States. Cornell, for example, McArdle's group over there looked at following levels of calcium after calving, and she developed different populations. And it was surprising to me because it's happening in ketosis as well. Cows just tend to drop. And the question is, well, how far do they drop and how quickly will they recover? And her data would say that, gee, if you got a cow that drops slightly blood calcium near parturition but recovers within the next 24 to 36 hours, that's the best cow. That's better than cows that didn't drop at all, or sort of cows that got themselves in big trouble. And Minnesota's got some neat data that parallels that with ketosis and beta-hydroxybutyric acid. So, you know, it's not maybe the most immediate response that we take a look at. So certainly blood calcium, and we're looking at trying, how do we try to achieve that effect out there in the herd as far as that goes. And there's some difference in parity. The first lactation heifers appears, the neat work coming out of Florida says that really we don't have to put some of these technologies, some of these DCAT products, for example, into first calf heifers and probably even some of the zeolite products, because they appear to be able to handle the calcium challenges because of bone mobilization, inability to absorb calcium better from the diet. So lots of exciting things that listeners should be aware of. And the story, I don't think it has totally been told yet, were other things that may come into play as well.
Yeah, probably the predominant strategy to try to prevent this drop in blood calcium after calving for the last, 30 years has been using an anionic diet or negative DCAD diet before calving. Can you talk us through best practices in that and how we go about doing that?
Sure. We looked at the DCAD, which stands for dietary cation anion difference, or some people call it a cation anion balance as far as that goes. And literally what these does is they're trying to turn on the parathyroid hormone to make it more case sensitive to calcium levels. And vitamin D becomes a player in this area as well. And basically, we see two different types of programs out there, and different companies and different co-ops champion each one of them. One is called partial acidification, which not quite as aggressive. Therefore, they feed lower levels of it. And one of the things that farmers have to do, they just have to do this, they have to monitor urine pH, because that is the test that tells you, do you have the right amount of supplement going to the diet based on the levels of the cations and anions that are in the diet as far as that goes, the program. The other one is called fully acidified. And there we are a little bit more aggressive. We are feeding more of the products, or dropping down the urine pH a bit lower. And therefore, there is also some costs there. And of course, you got to monitor, because if you get the urine pH too low, now we can have some challenges with the kidney and the cow herself. It's not a rumen acidosis, it's a metabolic acidosis. And this is something that you manage as the veterinarian, or as the consultant, nutritionist, or the dairy farmer himself on that farm to get the job done. So those have been two very useful tools. And there's different philosophies, research backing both of those products as far as that goes. If you go fully certified, though, you really got to watch dietary calcium. And the data from Illinois would suggest that there's higher levels of calcium being exported from the urine from the kidney. And therefore, you need to go to higher levels of dietary calcium in that type of a program.
Typically, then, we're feeding those DCAD supplements for the last 3 weeks of gestation.
Yes, Barry, my understanding is we need to have them on for about 8 or 10 days as far as that goes. But the challenge we all have is, well, the cow doesn't always calve on the exact same day she's supposed to calve as far as that goes. So we have a little wider window. And the good news with this technology is that there's been some research that said you could even go longer. When we talk some of the other technologies, you got to be careful that long-term you can't go. But there has been some people who have one group TMRs, and they are just literally or dry cow diets, and they're feeding the DCAD all the way through to all cows, including young cows. And that's one of the real challenges of our smaller farmers. And we have a lot of smaller farmers here in Illinois, you know, that you can't get as many groups as you and I like to have. Maybe you've had 1,000 or 2,000 cow dairy herd out there as well.
Okay, so then a newer technology, I think, that has driven a lot of interest in the last 2 years especially is the use of zeolites to try to trigger some of the same responses to protect against hypocalcemia. Can you talk us through what is a zeolite and how do these work?
Yeah, a zeolite basically is a chemically produced product, and basically it came from the Scandinavian countries or first came across as well. And what the zeolite does is it ties up phosphorus. And suddenly we're really nervous, Barry, about potassium. Boy, we got to get that potassium level down, and we put the DCAD in to balance, to negate if it gets too high as far as that goes. And the answer there was if you got way too much potassium, you just cannot feed enough DCAD to actually get the job done. So the zeolite is tying up phosphorus. And the new NASM studies just came out, says we want our phosphorus numbers down around 0.21% in the close-up diet, in the far-off 0.19. So that those are really low levels. We're looking at 25, 30 grams of phosphorus as far as that goes. And what's the bad news? Well, we have good fertility programs. We've done great things in crop science, byproduct feeds, and you'll end up getting diets around 0.3, 0.35 in the dry cows and close-up dry cow programs. And here comes zeolite. So much like when we had these high potassium numbers, we'd come in with these DCAD products out there. Most of those are going to be chloride-based or a sulfur-based type. Here we're going to use phosphorus. And so the goal is, and there's two major companies that are producing it. They're both very aggressive here in marketing. And in one case, one company doing a lot more research done at the University of Wisconsin. And this phosphorus ends up actually maintaining higher levels of calcium. And the listeners might say, wow, how do you connect those dots? And the answer is, it does work that way. And actually, these cows are phosphorus deficient. And so remember, I said, you got to be careful with some of this technology. This is one of them. And they're saying that if you have very low blood phosphorus levels, if you go more than maybe 14 days, we're not quite sure if we may create some big negative effects of being phosphorus deficient as well. So not only is the calcium higher, the magnesium numbers are also better in that program and certainly looks good. So the guideline has been that you're going to feed anywhere from 6.5 to 7 grams of the zeolite. This is basically an inert product per gram of phosphorus. So you can do the math pretty quickly. If you're feeding 30 grams of phosphorus, you can see you're going to be feeding, you know, half a pound of the zeolite product. And the cost of that program, each companies are slightly different because of the way they produce the product, somewhere in that $1.50 to $2 per cow per day. And of course, that's another factor comes into play is that the cost there, where you go to the DCAD products, which is perhaps the other tool you're going to be looking at in these diets, probably going to be about one third of that price out there as well. And that varies from company to company as well. So the zeolite is kind of the new kid on the block. It's getting a lot of interest. You don't have to worry about urine pHs or anything like that. The point is that you've got to stay on top of the diets. And that's true in all dairy diets. You got to make sure if the phosphorus would start to increase or decrease, then you should change the level of zeolite that you'd be giving to those older cows as far as that goes.
you mentioned one benefit, at least, if you don't have to worry about potassium anymore. Are there other reasons people would consider using this strategy when it costs three times as much per cow per day?
Well, what I hear from my dairy farmers who are using it is that they think it's much easier to manage. So you don't have to be taking the weekly, and that's what we would suggest in a larger herd, especially weekly urine samples to be sure that something hasn't just shifted or drifted on you, and that care that came to the program. So people think it's a simpler program. We don't have to be quite as every week on top of it as this goes. If they've got a good nutritionist, then he or she will stay on top of any dietary changes and changes in forages that could change the phosphorus levels as well. But that's about the major thing I hear, Barry, is that it appears to have not quite a stringent management requirement. And remember, I stressed earlier, if you're going to go DCAD, it's still a lot of farmers still doing DCAD, you've got to run the urine pHs. You just got to stay on top of this because otherwise you'll be out of the optimal window. And as a result, you can either have no benefits or you'll risk damaging the cow. You say, well, could that happen with the phosphorus? Sure. If you tie up the phosphorus too long, if you feed too much zeolite, that too can have some deleterious effects as well. So it's called management. And both programs can be equally as effective and have different advantages in terms of costs and simplicity of the program.
So do you know, are a lot of farms that are moving the zeolite direction, are they shifting to more like a 14-day close-up pen instead of 21 or 28?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think all of them are staying pretty much at that 20-21-day window as far as that goes. But Gary Etzel years ago did a study saying that, you know, if you're going to go to a 10-day product line, something like 15-20% of the cows will miss that. In other words, they'll just calve in early out that in that program as well. So I'm not hearing too much. That's a great question. I better not answer that. I know, Barry, maybe you've heard as well, but I don't hear people, me, but that 20-21-day becomes pretty magical in these close-up pens.
Some of it is people just not wanting to put the cows through another pen move as they get that close to calving, right?
Yeah, and there's other things too in that close-up pen. Usually we're increasing amino acid flow because dry matters are dropping. You might be increasing starch levels also to get a little better energy dynamics going in because we know what colostrum synthesis is happening. We know the calf is rapidly growing at this stage of the game, and being redundant now, dry matters can be dropping as well. So not only are the DCAD zeolite products become a factor, there's other things happening in that close-up pen that we probably can't get accomplished if we get down to, say, 14 days as far as that goes, in that last trimester of that calf that's rapidly growing.
Maximize profitability and herd health with early detection in animal health, reproduction, and feeding. The most advanced bolus technology and professional support from agricultural experts make this possible with SmaxTech, the health management system that future-proofs your dairy operation.
So another tool that's in the toolkit for most farms is postpartum calcium boluses, or some farms have done subcutaneous calcium infusions, things like that, those kind of tools. And it seems like the popularity of these things has really ebbed and flowed over time. And how do you think about boluses today in light of either a DCAD or a zeolite strategy?
We still see them being used, especially in older cows, meaning like third lactation and above, especially if the cow has got some history behind her. Let's say she had ketosis or she had other factors, may have twinned, for example, at that point. And so they'll pop these boluses in. Now, our listeners be well aware that all boluses are not created equal. And in fact, we did a little visit to one of the major supply companies, and they were stocking five or six different boluses. And you've got to be delivering somewhere around 50 grams of calcium in the bolus or boluses, as far as that goes. And usually they're made up of calcium chloride, which is a fairly rapidly available calcium source, meaning rapidly absorbed by the cow. Then there's calcium sulfate, which is a bit slower. And so it has a little more of an even flow. And ideally, according to one recommendation from one of the manufacturers, you would bolus these cows right at calving. And then again at 14 or 12 or 14 hours later. So in other words, a rebolus of these animals until the cow appears that she is recovered or is really doing well out there in the program. Now, Dr. McCullough McArdle at Cornell would question that because she would like us to wait 24 to 36 hours before applying these calcium things, because sometimes if we give them calcium, especially if we IV it or we sub-Q it, then we just force the calcium to go up, and now all of a sudden the hormonal systems aren't in control anymore. But Barry, one thing we really need, and I'm not seeing it yet, maybe you have, but we need a cow side calcium test, because one farmer challenged me and said, well, if I'm going to wait 24 hours, 36 hours before I give a bolus, what if it's one of those cows that aren't going to recover? And now I've lost that time, opportunity to maybe get that cow back on her feet as far as that goes. And so that's a good point. So I'm seeing that the boluses to me still seem to be valuable when you do a quick survey. Drenching used to be drenching was a big thing. We drench these cows with calcium propionate, especially because they would give me a couple of things with the calcium and the propionate as a source of glucose. But if you think takes management skills, now you have a pretty strong people, because you're going to start bolusing or drenching cows. They know what's coming, and look out as far as that goes. But certainly, much like our discussion with the close-up diet, drenching cows, you can put some other neat things in the drench as well. Electrolytes, for example, just the sheer volume of water. We're kind of convinced when you drench cows, one of the big advantages is just rehydration, just really getting these cows drenched and rehydrated, and also flushing the rumen to kind of get things off and running. So again, that's another tool in the toolbox. You've got your boluses, you've got your IVs, you've got your drench products. You come in along with the products that we talked about here a bit earlier.
In my experience, it's surprising how many cows will voluntarily drink 4 or 5 gallons of an electrolyte solution, like full of calcium, right? And then you can avoid the drenching issue. But then from a management standpoint, what would you do with the 20% that refuse to drink it or whatever?
I smile, because that was one of my jobs at our farm back in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and that was to carry 2 5-gallon pails of warm water. Had to be warm, not cold water, had to be warm water, and let these cows drink that, because these cows were in a calving stall, which may or may not have access to a drinking cup as far as that goes. And of course, one company tried this, but they didn't have much success on it, and that was what they call the drinkable drench. So that you take the water, put this packet into it, and now we got a factor of palatability comes into play, you know, in terms of, well, what is it? You and I also drink liquids at times and say, no, I'd never drink that again. Well, sometimes cows are a little bit like us and saying, you got to be kidding me. You think I'm going to drink that powder? And then we had another guy that said, well, what I'm going to do, I'm going to sprinkle that drench powder on my calf, so when she licks the calf, she'll lick the powder. And I said, I understand what you're doing, but I think you aren't going to get much water reinforcement at that point. And then he kind of looked at me like, what am I talking about? But anyway, fun discussion. Farmers are always intrigued on the technologies and things that they'll try to do on the farm itself.
The better farms that you talk with today, I'm asking this because, you know, I've seen some shift, I think, but are they doing things different in terms of monitoring fresh cows than they did 10 years ago?
Yeah, I think so. There's some really neat protocols out here. The farms that really have the real answer, if they've got automation in the milking parlor, and if they can follow milk production, and if you follow milk production in the first 2 weeks, the first 4 weeks, the first 6 weeks, you can really see how well that cow is progressing. Another one, of course, is the rumination collars now that come tremendous tool, because indirectly it gives you a little idea what dry matter intake is happening on these cows, and it becomes very, very valuable. So I think those farmers that are having, and we're seeing a lot of interest in the rumination collars or the neck collars and ear tags, because it's got reproduction written all over it. It's got herd health written all over it. It's got lameness written all. I mean, it's a tremendous tool as far as that goes. But certainly for fresh cows, it allows us to really go with it. I'm not sure. We're trying to get away from locking cows up for more than 30 or 40 minutes, because they're just out of their environment. They don't lay down. They may not eat as much feed. And so certainly when we can use some of these less evasive measurements, that we can capture via the parlor or via the collars or ear tags we have, I think it has some real possibilities. But certainly on our hit list would be temperature. And now we're getting ways of getting temperatures without having to do rectal temperatures using various devices out there. We just saw a presentation recently here at the U of I doing like baby calves, looking for heat stress, but also for use it for sickness. And so temperature, if we can scan the cow instead of having to manipulate that cow, we can also go from there. So certainly, I think a lot more management of fresh cows. And our comment is, and I'm not sure, Barry, you'll agree with that, but we'd like to see them, if we're going to be in a fresh cow pen for about 10 or 12 days, to be sure that we're mastitis risk has lessened. The uterus has basically responded positively as far as that goes. And if they're ready to go by 10 or 14, whatever criteria you're using, put them in the high group, because they need nutrients that we can get unless we've got a really good fresh cow diet. And the fresh cow diets are catching on, but again, you know, you got to be a big herd again. You know, if all of a sudden I need to have far off, close up, and heifers split off, and then I've got fresh cows, and you know, pretty soon it begins a bit of a challenge.
Fascinating. Thanks for sharing your insights.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Our Yeast 40 ruminal and intestinal double modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Your partner for extra animal performance, Bergen Schmidt Animal Nutrition. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Natural Biologics is using cutting-edge science to deliver cost-effective solutions for the animal health and productivity challenges you face. For conventional or organic production systems, Natural Biologics can help support rumen health and immune function, mitigate pathogens, and increase production efficiency. Visit naturalbiologics.com to learn more.
Got our three famous questions we've got to throw at you. The first one, we want to know, what's your favorite dairy-related book or resource that you turn to?
Well, I came from the extension world. So listen, when the Horns Dairymen and Progressive Dairymen get in the mailbox, you better read it, because by and large, they are someone is might call and say, Dr. Bradford, did you read that article about what X, Y, and Z? And if you didn't read the article, then you're kind of going, okay, well, this guy obviously is not following that. So certainly that has to be right there, as far, especially if you're going to be working with dairy farmers in the field. Obviously, the Journal of Dairy Science, and now we get appendums to them. Lots of good research in there, but still, to be honest with you, there's usually two or three articles I find really pretty valuable, and then the rest of them are somewhat heavily involved towards more in the manufacturing area or very technical gene manipulation. And I know, Barry, you're in that area, but you know, turning on genes and stuff like that. So certainly, those would be important resources that come in monthly. These are monthly resources for that, of course. And of course, all of us have probably, I'm sure all of us have online have read the Nason book, and you just got to read the book. Some of the chapters are really difficult for me, most of them are very well done and very applied. I think dairy farmers, even dairy farmers, including dairy farmers, should consider looking at the Nason, because it's well written.
All right. What about your favorite book or resource outside of agriculture?
You know, if you're looking at just reading in general, I'm one of those Grisham guys. You know, I enjoy reading the Grisham books, and I find them. I probably don't spend as much time as I should reading them, but certainly I do. If you're looking for a non-dairy type area as far as that goes, you know, we still get, of course, other resources coming from the agronomic aspects of it, the marketing side. Those are all good resources too, but those are all kind of related to dairy as well.
I'm curious, you're probably one of the fastest communicators I work with that people actually can understand what you're saying. Do you read just as fast? Are you a fast reader too?
No, I don't think so. But the joke is one of my professors at Wisconsin when I graduated. He said be sure half the stuff you say is what is technical and the other half is how you say it, but be sure you get done saying it before they're done listening. So his words of wisdom was as far as that goes. So I jokingly say that I can go 600 words a minute, once in a while 800 at burst, but hang on to your hats. Just pick out the stuff you really, really want to hear. But you're right, I can talk pretty fast, but I found another young man at the Four State Extension Conference that I think talks faster than I do. I was just amazed how fast that young man could talk. But anyway, so be it.
We may have to set up a competition. Okay, speaking of words of wisdom, then we want to hear, in your opinion, what sets successful dairy professionals apart from those who are less successful?
Wow, that's a fascinating question. I think you really have to be committed to whatever you're going to be doing in your profession. If you're a researcher and you want to do work on blood calcium, then you really got to commit to it. You got to believe in it, and you got to stay current with it as far as that goes. If you're going to work with dairy producers, you just got to like people. You got to be able to relate to them, listen to them, understand them, and at times disagree with them. But in a very positive way as far as that goes. And we made farm visits. We'd always say, well, there's always three things we're going to probably figure out that they're doing really well. Make sure you get that on the table right away. And then maybe two or three things that maybe they should be considering on their facilities as far as that goes. So I think in many cases, if you're a researcher, you're still a grad student, so you're in the people business. If you're a dairy farmer or an educator, you're an extension person, you're going to work with people as well. And you have to enjoy people, and they can see that. Trust me.
Oh, for sure.
They can see it.
Well, Dr. Hutchins, thank you. As always, it's been a great pleasure chatting with you today.
Well, Barry, thank you very much. A great opportunity. Great fun to interact with you as well. And certainly we wish you well with your new dairy up there in Michigan. So hopefully that'll work well for you as well. And just keep that price of milk up there as far as that goes.
Okay, sounds good. Well, this has been another episode of the Dairy Podcast Show brought to you by Wisenetics. And if you haven't followed the show, make sure you hit the button so you don't miss the next episode. And we'll see you then.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.